Joining us today is a good friend of ours, a good friend of the media for many years, Minerva Bauman. She started out working here at UTEP. She worked at the Prospector. She worked with myself at KTSM, and then she also did some columns for the newspaper, and now she's working at New Mexico State University as the media relations person there. Minerva, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louie. It's nice to be with you.
Now, the reason we have you here, of course, we're going to tell some old war stories about media and how it, in your opinion, how it's changed. Mm-hmm. But you have a book out. It's called Ordinary Angels, Stories of Daily Life in El Paso del Norte. You wrote, as I mentioned before, columns for the newspaper. Was it the Times or the Herald
Post? El Paso Times.
El Paso Times. So many years. And this is a collection of some of those columns that you wrote. Mm-hmm. And it's an easy read, so you don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, I don't have time to read. But it's also some very interesting stories about people, ordinary people that we run across, that you ran across. And so tell us, first of all, how did you start with writing columns for the El Paso Times?
Well, it was really interesting. A previous editor there, Chris Lopez, decided to invite members of the community to write columns for the newspaper. And so a bunch of people sent in columns, and they selected four people to write on a regular basis, on a monthly basis. So it was a different person each Sunday. And we did that for a little over 2 years. And then they had a new editor come in. And when Chris left and the new editor came in, they just stopped doing those columns.
But what about as far as you being able to hold on to these? Did they keep all of them? Or, of course, you kept copies, right?
Well, yes. The way they did that was that they told us as authors that they would have the first publication rights. And then after that, we could do whatever we wanted. And at the time, of course, my mom clipped out every single article and saved them and reread them over and over again. And some of my other friends had said this as well as my mom. Why don't you just put them all together in a book so that we can read them and have them? And of course, as we all know, I never got around to it. Those suckers are so hard to find, those round to-its. So I never got around to it. And then over the past year, it's been a tough time. I've had my mom very, very ill, my grandmother very ill, my aunt died. And so we've had a lot of family issues, challenges going on. And my mom, when it just seemed like she wasn't going to survive much longer and was in the hospital the last time, I had this thought in my head, I need to put this together and I need to get it to her before she leaves. And so I contacted LL Press. It's a small press in Austin. And the publisher there was willing to work with me. And I was able to get it published and out and get some advance copies before Christmas. So I was able to give that to my mom for Christmas.
What a great story.
So I felt so lucky. And it's funny, the outcome. I don't know how much these things matter with health, but my mom has been doing so well ever since then. She's been out of the hospital, thank the good Lord, and she's just been doing very well in her health. My grandmother has been doing better too. So my grandmother just turned 101. My mom just turned 80. And as you and I know, I'm going to turn 60.
I think everybody's doing it. It's the latest fad.
It's the latest fad, yes. Turning 60, yeah.
Tell me about the stories. Was it difficult for you to sort through and decide what was going to go in, what was not going to go in, or was
actually
that an editor's choice?
No, not at all. Actually, I used the ones that were published, and I actually had a few more that never were published because they stopped publishing them at some point. And so I had some extra ones. And then I decided to add one more that I wrote when I was trying to get this book together for my aunt who passed away. And so I added that, and then it turned out to be 36.
And are some of these people that you were able to write about and talk with, are most of them still around that you're aware of?
As far as I know, yes. It's really interesting because a lot of times you just see people in a certain situation. It's people who may need help, or maybe I'm in a situation where I need help. And it's the nature of El Pasoans, I have found, since I'm a lifelong El Pasoan, that if you need help, somebody's going to help you. It doesn't really matter, you know, where they're from or what they're doing. It's just the kind of community where people help one another. And that's what I've experienced here my whole life. And, you know, these stories are just daily life, ordinary life, and things that you run into. And the truth of the matter is we would all probably have a lot more gratitude for the small kindnesses that people pay us and that we can repay in kind if we just thought about it.
And, you know, when we're driving to work, riding the bus, or waiting for the bus, we see a lot of people at the shopping mall, at the market, wherever. And everybody has an individual story. And I guess, as you mentioned, if we only stopped and took the time to listen to those stories. And one of those that reminds me of driving through and seeing people is the gentleman that you would always buy the newspaper from.
Yes, yes. And, you know, we always see those folks. And, of course, occasionally, you know, you would read a little article about somebody who, the flashy ones, you know, the Toreador newspaper seller, some of these other folks, right? But the guys that you see every day and you just have a little chat to, and this little gentleman was so funny and he was so nice and so sweet. And I do wonder what happened to him. You know, sometimes they change their routes, right? And they put them in a different location. But these are daily interactions you have with people, and you listen to them and you hear their stories and they listen to you. And it's just part of our lives and something that we can appreciate.
You mentioned your mother at the beginning of the interview and people who remember Lomart in East El Paso will remember your mom from the bakery.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Everybody remembers her as the German lady. And most people, when I did this book, they said, oh, you're the daughter of the German lady from Lomart? I can't believe it. I didn't know that. Because everybody remembers her. She was there for like 50 years. And it was Big Eight way back in the day. And then it turned into the Lomart. And my mother is actually the person who had the idea for the deli. It was her. She was working in the meat market. And she was catering to some of the German Luftwaffe people who were stationed over there at Fort Bliss. And they were looking for things like, you know, deli meats and cheeses and things that you don't normally get around here, imported type things. And she started seeing that as a good customer service to try and find these things for them. And as they, you know, started stocking those in the meat market area, they found a lot of other people like those things too. So it turned into a business where they knocked out the wall to the flower shop next door. And they ended up building a whole deli and a bakery and everything else there. And it made a lot of money for the store.
Now, was that always the international bakery, or was that changed after your mom's idea?
Yes.
Was it that before?
Well, no, it wasn't. What they did was the owner of the grocery store built on the deli, and then they got the Vie de France, what do you call it, franchise for El Paso, and put that in there. And so they got German bakers and all that kind of stuff in there as well. And of course, for some reason, my mom seemed to attract other little German ladies to work there. And for years and years, she worked there. And her main, her main motto was customer service.
We're going to get back to some of these stories. Again, the name of the book is Ordinary Angels, Stories of Daily Life in El Paso del Norte. Minerva Bauman is the author. As I mentioned, Minerva is a veteran news person. We worked together at one of the television stations, KTSM. But she started here at UTEP, and she was working for The Prospector. You were the editor, were you not?
Yes, I was.
Tell us a little bit about what you experienced going into The Prospector as a student and then as an editor, but then after you went out into the real world and how you've experienced it over the years and how things have changed.
Well, I'll tell you, when I started at UTEP, I was actually doing reporting, and then I ended up being the entertainment editor and the assistant news editor, and then I became the editor. So over time, during the years, I ended up in my senior year being the editor of The Prospector. And we had a lot of autonomy. We had somebody who was in charge of the publications, but they never interfered in news or editorial type decisions. And when I went out into the real world, what I found was basically nothing that different from what I was used to, except that it was on a much faster basis. You don't have as much time as you had when you were working on the prospector to, you know, polish your story and get it ready and put it in the college newspaper. You know, when you're working on deadline, especially in broadcast, as you and I both know, because we worked at KTSM, where we did both broadcasting and radio. So we had to do radio news cut-ins as well as do the broadcast. And so once you get out there on regular deadlines, you're bang, 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 bang. You can have your stuff together really quickly. And now I can't imagine how these people do it, because they not only have all those deadlines all day, but they're now multimedia. They've got to be online. They're doing podcasting, tweeting, social media, and doing their broadcast work too, on top of all of that. So that's a lot of work to do. And, you know, it's hard not to make mistakes when you're going that fast.
And some people have mentioned, you know, on social media, Facebook particularly, people will say, remember when this blank, and they'll talk about Walter Cronkite, you know, David Brinkley, Dan Rather, all those reporters, anchors that used to be on there. And one of the biggest, I guess, concerns among older people, and I guess we're in that category, is the fact that they'll say, well, you know, news used to be a little bit more objective. And now viewers, listeners, readers have a choice. They can go to whatever newspaper, whatever website they want to go and read what they want to read.
That is very true. And I'll just tell you, not that long ago, some psychologists at NMSU did some research about how people pick what kinds of news they listen to. And they had three different groups. And they had one group where they surveyed and they were allowed to only view things that reflected their own opinions. A second group where they could select whatever they wanted. And a third group where they had to just choose from anything, right? And what they found was that people will, even when they have a choice, they will select the areas or the news areas or the websites that reflect what they already believe, rather than looking at the broader perspective and trying to take it all in.
You know, somebody once said, and I can't remember if it was in graduate or undergraduate school, about choices and what we make, and that a lot of people will go with what's familiar. However, they do want to be able to choose. So say, for example, Baskin-Robbins, if they have 31 flavors, but you every time you go in there, you order chocolate almond. If the next time you go, they just have chocolate almond, you're going to complain because they don't have 31 flavors, even if you're still going to order the chocolate almond.
Well, and I read another study about choice where they said if there's more than three choices, people become overwhelmed and they don't want to choose. So more grocers are thinking about how they place different products on the shelf so that the buyer will actually purchase something instead of being too overwhelmed and just walk away.
We're visiting with Minerva Bauman. She is the author of the book, Ordinary Angel, Story from Daily Life in El Paso del Norte. This is a collection of Minerva's stories from the columns that she wrote for the El Paso Times. We see a lot of different cultures, a lot of different things that we won't see in other places of the nation. And one of the ones that jumped out at me was Tito's tribute. Tell us about that story.
Well, you know how when you see something for the first time that you've never noticed before, and then suddenly you see it everywhere? Well, that's what happened to me with this. It was so beautiful. I actually have a picture of this in the book. It was a bright red truck with this beautiful painting of a boy's face, and then this little notation about his name and his death. So I followed this truck to where they stopped because I just had to find out more. And I talked to this father, and he told me about his son who had been killed in a traffic accident, and that this was his way of remembering him and letting other people know what a wonderful boy he was and how much he and his wife loved their son. And after I saw that, I started seeing these memorials everywhere I went. And in that story too, I talked to a young woman who put her boyfriend, who was a soccer player who'd passed away, and put a little soccer ball and a tribute to him on the back window of her sedan. So many people make these tributes in El Paso, and I don't know if they do this in other places or not. There's a lot of things that people around here do to memorialize and pay tribute that people don't do in other places. But there's a lot to do with family and caring and wanting to share not only good things, but the grief that we have. Because I think when we share it, it's somehow easier to bear.
You mentioned tributes and memorials, and the book is called Ordinary Angels. And the first story, I believe, you talk about a couple who has a tribute to their son, and they sold angels and other things. But that's not the way it started out. Tell us about that.
Well, it's interesting. The whole thing came together. I was actually looking for bridesmaids' dresses downtown in El Paso when I happened to notice this Angels via Michael sign. And I thought, what is that? And so I went in, but it's also Central Furniture Store on Overland Street. And when I ended up talking to the Nips, Mr. and Mrs. Nip, who own the store, they told me about their son, Michael, and how they were, you know, they had their furniture store downtown. And when he was killed in a traffic accident, they decided to turn the first floor of their furniture store into this angel shop. And there were angels everywhere. It's huge. It's a beautiful place. And by the way, they do have some of the book there. Mrs. Nip was so excited to have the book down there. So they're actually selling it there in their store. But this is such a wonderful place of hope and peace and beautiful, not just angels, but other kinds of things that give people inspiration and hope. And I was just talking to her not that long ago. She was just so excited. You know, she gave me a hug and she was really, really happy that this was coming out. But when I was there, I realized that this was the perfect thing for my friend Linda East, who I know you know. And at the time, Linda had been diagnosed with a brain tumor. And you know, she was a president of Sun Bowl at that time. After she had undergone surgery for that brain tumor, she actually gave a speech. I remember us practicing together that speech, and she did a really good job. So over the time, I got different gifts for her from Angels via Michael. And then the two of us went down there. She met Mrs. Nip, and they just had the greatest chat together. It was just a wonderful story and a wonderful coming together of people who have both faced a lot of health challenges. Mr. Nip has since passed away. He had had two heart transplants, and that's what Mrs. Nip had told me as far as their health challenges at the time. But so she really understood the idea of someone having to deal with this and having to persevere and come back from that.
And what an amazing story itself about Linda, because Linda is such a fighter, and other people that we work with, like Philippa and Stella Casas.
Oh, yes. There's
some great people, very strong people. You were walking, you mentioned in your book that you had surgery, and you were going outside walking, and you encountered a gentleman who was always walking
yes,
as well.
Yes, I did. And his name is Victor. And Victor, so amazingly, I was just barely able to walk. And so I was trying to get myself outdoors after major surgery. And he came up, and I had seen him all around walking everywhere he went. And he always walked really fast. And so I was trying to get out of his way, but he slowed down and he walked with me and he talked to me and he asked me how I was doing and he encouraged me. And we just chatted about how walking is really good for you and how it didn't matter how slowly you went. It was fine. Just keep going. And I have since seen him just very recently because where I used to live in central El Paso, Manhattan Heights, he actually lived in the same area. And I was selling my property there and ran into him. And that's when I took his picture for this book. And he was so excited. I told him, well, wait till it comes out. I'm going to come bring you a copy. He was really happy about that, too.
And you offered him a ride.
Yeah, yeah. I did. I did. A later time, I had offered him a ride when I saw him. He was like way over. You know where that chicken place is on Montana? Way over there. And this was like from Central to way over there, right? And I was driving down the street and I saw him. Gosh, he walks so far. And I offered him a ride and he kind of gave me a little look there like, I'd rather walk. And I knew that was his little, what should I say, chiding me that I should be walking too. And so after that, I got my walking shoes out and started doing my Saturday walks again. Bless his heart. But I saw him recently and he's doing very well. And he was very happy to see me. And he's looking forward to seeing the book when I take it to him.
Just out of curiosity, I know that you're still very busy. You work at New Mexico State University, communication there, and you see a lot of people up there as well, a lot of students, a lot of people who live in the Las Cruces area. And I was just wondering, do you still like take notes, journals, anything about stories that possibly might come up later?
You know, I don't. I haven't since I was doing the column. But I could tell you that there are so many things that have occurred to me and continue to happen all the time that would be the subject of a story. Like I would say last year, I had a continuing issue of my locking myself out of the house. And I kept calling the same locksmiths to come back and let me into my garage. And the third time I came, like the first time they charged me full price. And the second time they're like, oh, you again. So they charged me less. The third time they charged me even less then. And the young man who came said, I'm going to teach you how to do this yourself. You know, so most people would say, oh, this is great. You know, we can just keep charging her because she keeps locking herself out of her house. But no, El Pasoans, they look at you as a person. You're not a revenue stream. You're a person. And so they're going to try to do something that helps you.
So that brings up the story of we've all encountered this where we jump in our car, try and turn it, and it won't go. Lights, battery. And sometimes we don't have jumper cables or sometimes we're not anywhere near somebody. And you write a story about that.
I did write a story about that. And it was amazing how it didn't matter who I came across. You know, the officials at the storage place where I first had my dead battery. I ran into three guys who were there loading some furniture into a storage space. And they happened to be Irish. And they were more than willing to help me. They were more than willing to help me. A couple of abuelitas in their big old Suburban were willing to help me. You know, some guy at the UPS, you know, he was willing to help me. He was sending a ton of packages out, but he told the lady, keep going. I'm going to go help her start her car. And, you know, it's just that people here are willing. You know, I've heard stories, and you've probably heard these too, about people who are placed here in El Paso after Katrina, and how many of these people decided to stay and make their home here because it was such a welcoming place. And they simply felt that the community was such that they felt they belonged. And I think we all do. I think we all feel that. And that, you know, there are no strangers. We welcome people here.
And that's one of the things that we've noticed also with the refugees and the migrants coming in, that there are so many people willing to help with meals, with blankets, anything else. And the people who, as you mentioned, are not from here say, what a wonderful place El Paso is.
That's absolutely true. We take it for granted, I think, just what a kind and giving community El Paso is. I mean, most of the folks here, you and I have decent jobs and we're making a good living, but a lot of folks are not that lucky. And yet, whatever they have, they're willing to share. They're willing to lend a hand, help out their neighbor, help somebody who's less fortunate than they are. And it's just a characteristic of people that I know and that I've grown up with. You know, people as a kid that I grew up with, we never really thought about racism or any stuff like that. I know I grew up with folks who ended up having really big time jobs out on the East Coast or West Coast and who are African American. And they felt they didn't really know what racism was until they left El Paso. Then they were like, oh, wow, that's what it is. Because here, everybody was just the same. Everybody, there wasn't that kind of really distancing between people.
One of the stories that really opened up my eyes as well is Mujeres de la Esperanza. Tell us about that story.
Well, in some of my walking, I came across this little nondescript building, and it had that sign, and I was trying to go in. They weren't open that day, so I had to contact them later because I just was wondering, what do they mean? You know, women of hope. You know, that's what it means, women of hope. And so I found out that this tiny group of people has some big ideas handling large problems and helping women to better themselves. You know, there are a lot of studies that have been done that say that women are really the influencers of their families. The more women have education, they impact children, they impact the community. They're the connectors. So this group seeks to help women get educated, get them different kinds of skill sets that they can use in their families. And I found that there were artists and writers that were writing this book that were helping to raise money for these organizations. So there's so many people out there, large organizations, small organizations, trying to do the work of helping other people.
You have a story here about the scents and aromas. A lot of people are talking about essential oils and flowers and all that stuff, but this one, Sanctuary of Scents, is a great story.
Well, that's the El Paso Municipal Rose Garden, which is absolutely beautiful, and it is for everyone. I would encourage anyone to go and visit the Municipal Rose Garden because it's there for El Pasoans. You know, it's something that this community of gardeners and volunteers has continued to nurture over many, many years. And every time I go there, it is filled with all kinds of roses of all different types and names and things that I'd never heard of, and places to sit with little benches. And even tourists show up there because it's something so beautiful. I remember I went to go see it after the freeze that we had. Remember the big freeze? And at that time, even the palm trees there were still alive. So clearly someone's taking good care of the rose garden.
Well, Minerva, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. You've been a great friend over the years, and it was so great to see you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, I have one more thing.
Yes.
I wanted to let you know that it's not only available online through Google Books and Amazon and Barnes & Noble and LL Press, but it's also available at Angels via Michael downtown.
Thank you so much. Minerva Bauman has been our guest, Ordinary Angel, Stories of Daily Life in El Paso del Norte. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sainz.